evening, everyone. Welcome, Kevin. Hopefully, Kevin, you can actually hear us as well. Excellent. The great thing about you being the only person on the screen is that you're actually lifelike. You're actually size the size of the rest of us in the room. So it's quite convincing. So well done. Okay, look, thank you very much, particularly also to Mark and Sue for helping to sub, because I know this week is obviously a slightly odd week, being straight where it is before Christmas, so we have had a couple of subs, so thank you very much for agreeing to help out. Going on to item one, welcome to everyone else as well. So item one, we have got two apologies, which is from Councillor Puzzlin and Councillor Barclay. Have we got any other apologies? Obviously, Councillor Baldwin's on sort of 6 months of leave.
One for Councillor Baldwin and Councillor Andre standing in for him.
Yes, indeed. So thank you very much for that. I don't think otherwise we've got any other apologies that we need to record. So minutes of the previous meeting, for those that were present, it was quite a brief meeting, that was on the 21st of November. Is everyone happy that the minutes are accurate and they represent what they should represent?
Okay, yeah, fine.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you very much. So now move on to item three, which is the disclosure of pecuniary interest and other registrable and non-registrable interests. Does anyone have any interest that they need to, Councillor Snart?
Just a personal interest on the item six, veterans and reservists.
Of course, I'm a former veteran.
Yeah.
Yourself, or
I don't know about a veteran. I think I'm. Yes, I might be.
Veteran.
Okay. And also, given that the policy now, well, the proposal is that other spouses or common law partners, if there's anyone that's actually got another half who's been in the services, then obviously that would also be something that's actually just, you know, I'm looking at you, Sue, I don't know why, I'm assuming otherwise, no. Okay, that's fine, in that case, good. So, in that case, we'll move on to item four, questions under committee procedure 12.8. We do not have any questions. So, on to the main meat of the meeting. So item five, which is the apprenticeship reporting update. Kevin, I know you're here to actually support us on this one as well, so if there are any questions. So as usual, take all the papers as read. However, we'll pick up any points before starting any general discussion. So that fly is going to drive everyone nuts. Apologies. If anyone can get within swatting distance of it, then please do try and kill it before it drives you nuts. Simon, it's up to you. How good are your reactions? Karate Kid. I'm not entirely sure giving you a laser beam staring is probably going to do the it's part of somebody else now. Right, okay. So, apprenticeship reporting update. So this is obviously for the period ending the end of March 2022. So it's, I wouldn't say it's historical, but it's obviously for the previous council year rather than necessarily the current one. So it does also obviously include a fair amount of the pandemonium from the pandemic as part of the recording period. So Kevin, is there anything that you want to actually contribute or anyone else to start? I don't know whether there's sort of an intro that anyone wants to give as to where we are on the apprenticeship paper. I mean, it's a reporting of the period, really, isn't it?
Very overview. I mean, obviously, as you just said, the period was very much pandemic affected. It was particularly difficult in terms of recruiting new apprentices at the time, mainly because of the level of support that they could be given during their apprenticeship with the various restrictions. That was impossible. The picture has picked up quite a bit since then. Since April, we've actually had six starts on the apprenticeship, so it's picked up considerably since then. And on our books currently, we have eight apprentices in the council.
Okay, I'm just quickly doing I mean, that's 800 or 400 odd staff. So that's actually probably a much better stat than we certainly had for this particular reporting period that we're looking at the moment. Okay. Are there any questions that anyone wants to ask on the paper or observations that they want to raise with Kevin on it? Councillor Snark.
Kevin, good evening. I'm just reading the paper and it's talking about the average at least 2.3% of the staff of new apprentices. You just said six starters. How many of those were new?
Two were new at the time. One had been with us for around 3 months previously, and the others were existing staff.
And could I just ask, when we talk about this 2.3%, are there any penalties or is there any government sort of regulation around it? Do they slap our wrists or do anything to us to say you're not doing so well or what?
We have been required to publish our figures on our website, which we've done. There are no repercussions, no penalties in terms of this scheme. And in fact, this, I believe, is the last year we will have needed to report that target. So the target's now been removed, or at least the reportable element of the target. It was always a slightly strange number that it was a percentage of starts against, apprenticeship starts against the overall number of staff. So it was always going to be a low percentage in terms of how it was calculated. We obviously are always looking to make the best of our apprenticeship levy that we've got available. And there are a number of new initiatives that we're looking at, including hopefully we're going to be able to look at a graduate apprenticeship scheme to look at some of our harder to recruit jobs that we have at the moment at the council.
Right. Yeah, I was just going on to that and say we're looking at a paper tonight where we've got hard to employ and such in areas of the council. Mm-hmm. How many apprentices have we got in those areas and how do we actually try and bring that forward?
Okay, so there are quite a few areas that are difficult to recruit that we are looking at in terms of the apprenticeship scheme. So one particular area would be planning. So the fully qualified planner is actually a level 7, which is a postgraduate qualification. We've got one currently, one of our apprentices is working in that area. We can potentially, and is actually working towards their level 7 qualification. Other areas would include finance, accountancy. So we've got a lower level, level 3 at the moment, but we're in talks for a potential level 7, which is basically a fully qualified accountant. So that's another area. Similar areas might be environmental health, IT, and legal profession, all of which allow higher level, do have available higher level qualifications. The difficulty generally we find is, for obvious reasons, recruiting managers in those areas would prefer if they could recruit fully qualified people who would hit the ground running. That's always the challenge, and obviously we have to look at these alternatives literally when such people aren't available and it's more difficult to recruit. But we have been in discussion, for example, with the careers manager at Loughborough University to talk about how we might expand opportunities there for recruitment. So that's something that Rob has been involved in and pushing as well, our chief executive. So I'm hopeful we can have many more opportunities as well as the higher levels I've mentioned. There are also, you know, many good opportunities across the council where we can support our existing staff as well, either to develop their careers or actually improve in terms of the roles they're currently in.
Thank you. Could I just say, when we get the papers again, is there any way we could actually have that information, like the areas where, I don't know if everybody agrees about this, but it was my view that it would be helpful to members if we could just have a bit of background information about the sort of these areas and how are the actually apprentices are moving into these areas to probably try and get a better sort of area of view of that.
Well, I was going to say, actually, I mean, it's a very good point, and it, I don't know whether to actually add sort of colour to how the apprenticeship programme works for us is maybe just to take, without particularly going down to a named individual, unless they're happy to be so, but maybe just to give a couple of paragraphs as to, you know, why they became an apprentice with us, what's their progression, what sort of, you know, where will this lead to, what are the benefits for the individual, what are the benefits for us as an employer? Because I think it would help to actually just add a little bit of colour to what the apprenticeship programme means to us as an organisation and also to those that actually join up to it.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, that would be absolutely fine. Yes, I'd be happy to do so.
Okay. Could I just, as the final one, because now Kevin's here, so we, the last bit on page 10, it says we will continue to be impacted on COVID-19 pandemic. How do you actually see that? And when can we say we're free of it? Mm-hmm. Because I can see this just being a sort of thing that comes every time, saying we're actually not free of the pandemic. But there must be a point where we say this can't continue. We've got to do something, and we've got to make sure that we're on an even keel again. So how do you see that progressing?
So this particular item is reporting on the figure that we needed to supply to the government based on their requirements, which go back to April. And at the time, we could still see a continuing impact. Obviously now, I think things have changed, opportunities have opened up, and that's been proven by the increase that we've had in new apprenticeship opportunities. So I think that statement at the time when we were looking at the figure back in April probably was more applicable then than in terms of us now looking forward in terms of where we are with apprenticeships. So I think it's a very good point that you raised.
Thank you.
Nice one. Are there any other questions or any other points that anyone wants to raise? No? Okay. Thank you very much for that, Kevin. Now, we're being asked, I think, to note the report rather than necessarily approve. So if everyone's happy to note the report, then we will do so. Mm. Everyone's happy? Yep, absolutely. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much for that, Kevin. Okay, well, let's move on. Thank you very much. Let's move on to the next.
Christmas.
Yes, indeed. Happy Christmas. Has it frozen?
Yeah.
No, it's gone. It's okay, there we go.
It's faded out.
So let's move on to item 6, which is the paper on veterans and reservists, Armed Forces Covenant Policy Development. This is the update that we've flagged, obviously, through David's comments earlier on, where we are proposing to tweak our arrangements to also include spouses and spouses and common law, sorry, civil partners within the scheme. So I don't know, who does anyone from our, Anna, do you want to take us through this?
Or
Sally, in that case?
So it's just to enhance the range of policies and commitments that we already have in place. So we're obviously a gold award employer, we have the Employee Recognition Award, that's part of the Armed Forces Covenant. And we have existing policies. So the Guaranteed Interview Scheme is one we put in a few years ago, and that just currently applies to veterans. So it's to expand that to reservists and also spouses and partners. And the other side of this is to offer 5 days of unpaid leave for adult cadet forces leaders. Mm. So to just enhance the leave arrangements policy that we've got around that doesn't commit to a time scale at the moment. So it's just to make it clear that people can have 5 days for if they meet that criteria. And then also to further develop how we advertise jobs to target people within this community. So we currently advertise on the CTP website, Careers Transitions Partnership website. But it's also to advertise on the Forces Families website, which would target the spouses and partners as well as the veterans and reservists.
And I'm assuming from reading the paper and from what you just said, that this is something that's sort of coming out through good practice, through the sort of covenant discussions that we're having, not only sort of locally across the three councils that we work with, Melton and Rushcliffe, but also as a national sort of on the basis that we're gold standard and therefore this is what would be expected in the future.
Yeah, okay. So it's instigated by the team that work within this area, and they realise that the next level we need to do is to make these further commitments. So okay. It's really just to make sure that we're complying and we're offering all the support and commitment we can. Okay.
Does anyone have any questions or any comments that they wish to raise?
Just a comment if I may.
Absolutely. Yeah. Councillor Snodd.
Yeah. The part where we were talking about including spouses and civil partners, I think that's absolutely brilliant. I think sometimes they get forgotten. We've just got the frontline service and the families and that support them. It's so good to see that in terms of bringing them and even here, if you like. So that's good. And one thing I think with the gold award that we have, it really goes down well with the veterans. I know when I go hard times to the breakfast, they really appreciate it. And just getting together and talking over some of the problems and sort of good things that they did in the past is just remarkable. And well done the council, in my view.
Yes, thanks. And Sally mentioned that it's being generally done now across the country. I mean, are we sort of ahead of the curve with the chasing pack, or where do we stand exactly in the order of doing this?
I mean, we're gold level, so that, as far as I'm aware, is the highest level.
Yes.
And obviously we have various groups that meet around this, and we have a team that works specifically in this area, so I would assume that we're quite far ahead of some employers in this sense, because we've reached that standard.
Good.
And they're continuously looking at new commitments and ways that we can improve, and then obviously when it's something we can do, they'll bring that towards and we'll push that forward. So hopefully we're leading the way in that regard.
Good.
Thank you. Any other comments or any other points anyone wants to raise? Okay, thank you for that. So we have a recommendation which is on page 11 for the reasons given as on page 11 as well. Can I have a seconder for that?
I'll second
that. Okay, so Councillor Snodd will second. Can I see all those in favour? And that's everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you. Right. Let's move on to item 7, which is the recruitment and retention policy. So this is something that was flagged, I think, at the previous meeting that was going to be coming forward for this one. I think it's an area that all of us have been talking about a fair amount over the last 12 months in particular, as far as trying to fill posts that need filling. How can we attract more staff, whether it's through what we actually offer as an employer, but also any other ways that we can do so. This paper, I think, seeks to replace our current market premier policy with something that's a bit more proactive, sort of upfront recruitment rather than necessarily post. And seeks to replace the market premium policy with a new recruitment and retention incentives policy. So hopefully this is reasonably clearly set out. It's obviously been through the trade unions by the looks of the paper, and comments have been taken on board. So it's been backwards and forwards a few times. So is there anything else? Oh, this is you, Anna, is there anything else that you actually want to add before we actually open up for any comments?
Not really, no. I mean, it was something Rob was very keen to bring in to obviously try and seek the candidates that were struggling to fill in specific areas. So we've obviously improved what we had as an original honorarium policy, sorry, a market supplement policy. And added into that sort of the golden hello to sort of encourage people to want to come and work for us. But we have put those buffers in where if they leave within that short period of time, that actually they've got to pay some of that money back so that actually people aren't using and abusing that scheme, so to speak. Just as an incentive to try and attract, you know, those candidates in those posts where we are struggling. Equally, you know, it'll be that, considering what else is out there in the marketplace, how much they're paying to benchmark, you know, actually if that's needed or not anyway. So, yeah.
Thank you. Councillor Shepherd.
Thank you. I mean, yes, I understand the need for this. It's clearly been through a process of consultation. Redeemers are happy. I suppose the challenge is always, isn't it, to maintain morale and comradeship in the department when some are being paid more than others. But I guess what you've been telling us, that's understood by staff, and they realise it's part of what we have to do to really maintain a team.
Yeah, I mean, with a market supplement, obviously, if we put it on a post and we're bringing, say there's already three in a team and we're needing extras, if we put it on a post where we've already got people and those new people benefit from it, well, actually, the current staff would get that amount as well because we've got to pay everybody equally.
Right.
So we can't give it to a new person who's doing the same job as somebody who already works for us. So it will be given to those current staff if they're in the same post as well.
So there are benefits.
Thank you.
Councillor.
Thank you. Planning must be a horrendous job. So yeah, we're seeing officers turn up, you know, presenting 1 week, and then the next week they're actually working for themselves or working for a company. How's the pay structure work there? Can I ask that? You know, are they paid graded?
Within CHOM?
Within CHOM.
Yeah. Yeah, there's, I mean, they're all paid for the qualification and experience they've got on quite a varied banding. It starts quite low and goes quite high. And to be fair to Richard Bennett, the head of that area, he's put quite a substantial career grade progression into his salary grades.
Yeah.
So depending on the level that they come in at, obviously, you know, they're paid, or should they meet that next level of criteria, they move to the next pay grade. So he's done as much with
as
what we can to try and encourage.
I'm just presuming that's why they are leaving. They're going.
I think from what we gather within what we hear, planners are the area where the private sector is desperate for them, and they're just paying whatever they want to get them, whereas obviously we can't actually do that. But I mean, I know Kevin just briefly mentioned it, Rob has been doing some work with the university, and we have just job evaluated a new graduate internship to start and bring, you know, sort of newly qualified or part qualified students in to try and show them actually working for the council is a benefit, not just, oh God, I don't want to work for them, I want to work for some private, you know, high flying company sort of thing. So we are doing as much as we can in the background to encourage people to apply for the post with the council.
And I think the university is actually starting a new town planning course, aren't they?
I believe so, yeah.
So we are trying to partner with them to demonstrate that we can actually use them, you know, through their different stages.
Mm. And the current planning one, I think they've done 2 years study, and then they have to find employment for a year, and then they go back to do their final year. So we're looking to utilise that year to get them working with us and get them interested. So at the end of it, actually, you know, they might think, well, that's the place I want to apply.
You mean councils, if I may chair, councils have got one of the best pensions going, haven't they? You know, that needs promoting.
Yeah.
You know, my lad works for a parish council, you know, his pension's amazing. The thing about protecting students and apprenticeship, they're going to use us.
And that is, we accept that, that's there, but we've got to try and do something to actually, if they get in and they're interested in their learning, if we get 2-3 years out of them at the minute, we've got to accept that, and moving forward is how we try and retain them beyond that.
Thank you, Chair. And I think it's also, I mean, it's a very good point about the planning. I mean, we are, obviously the competition from the private sector is obviously very evident to all of us, but actually the competition between authorities is pretty competitive as well. So in Leicestershire, let alone the areas sort of surrounding us, there are, up until recently, I don't know whether it's improved, but there were a couple of local authorities that didn't have a single employed planner. They were all either contract staff or self-employed. So I mean, whilst we feel particularly in a difficult situation, I talk to others and it's just horrendous. I mean, just absolutely horrendous. But obviously everything, you know, it's pulling every lever and tweaking every button we possibly can to try and make what we know is a difficult situation slightly better. And if this helps, then that's good. But as you say, I mean, it's also about working with other organisations such as the university directly on our doorstep to be able to say, we're here, we can help, we can actually use your students, but also we can give them a great bit of training as well.
Yeah. So just one point if I may, Chair. So say a student comes across here then on an apprenticeship, do you automatically join them in the pension?
No. They would just be here for the duration of the apprenticeship. With the apprenticeship, there's no guarantee of a job at the end of that. It's really just the apprenticeship to qualify in that area during that whatever period of time the course runs for.
So they need a full-time contract. Okay.
Yes. The reason I say that, Chair, is because I know the pension is
absolutely. Gotcha.
But that's I don't know. You know.
Yeah.
I'm a funeral director, I bury people.
The pensions aren't much good at that point.
No.
Okay. I mean, it's worth exploring
it's
anything.
It is part
really,
of the what we advertise when we recruit.
Yeah. Okay. Councillor Slash.
Right. Then page 68, paragraph 8. I'm just curious, and I'm just trying to find it in the policy. And it said, trade unions are very active involved in discussions. And then it goes on to say, this included greater emphasis on non-monetary issues for recruitment and retention. Do you know what they were?
There is a page in the policy that talks about non-monetary issues. It's okay, it's quite a long policy.
Is it page 74?
Is it page
74? I think it is, page 74, I think, is where.
So they asked for some additions in that area to the original proposed policy, and they were
included.
Is that
agile working, etc.?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So they were included as part of those negotiations with the trade unions.
And they are good points to include, because actually there are several things that we offer as an employer that I think the private sector wouldn't be able to do so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we are currently going through quite a review of sort of what we would call the back office recruitment side of it. So we're trying to make the whole process a lot easier, because it can be quite cumbersome for both managers and applicants. So, we're looking to sort of open up whether we can accept, because currently we don't accept CVs as accounts when people apply. It has to be through our application form, which is an online form. So we're looking to whether we can accept CVs. Would that appeal more to people if they've not got to fill that application process in? So we're looking to change the system to try and adapt other ways to encourage those applicants. And I know Mark Roberts has done some work on the website, hasn't he?
Am I correct in saying that recently we did advertise for a post where we'd stripped down a lot of the normal questions, and we ended up getting a lot more applicants? And I don't know whether it was directly as a result of that, or
a few jobs where we know we've sort of struggled or potentially thought we would. We have sort of stripped out the other process just as a bit of a test to obviously establish where we can go.
And with improvements,
we've had more candidates apply.
Okay.
Whether it was more appointable is the problem, then that's more time consuming, obviously, shortlisting.
But then we have historically also had times where we've actually put applications up and not actually had any applicants at all. So I guess even if we're getting the volume, hopefully there's at least one or two people who are applying. But
And I know we're trying to do much more on social media and, sort of LinkedIn, that side of it, to try and appeal to different markets and different people.
There's a lot around job descriptions, isn't there? And there's also the positive view that you can put on those as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's all part of the same project that we're looking at.
Yeah.
And there's just so many intricacies involved in it, but we are looking at it. Mm.
Again, pulling every lever and pressing every button to see what works. Okay. Are there any other points anyone wants to raise?
Just one, Chair, if I may. At the bottom of page 2, golden hello payment. I've never heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I've never heard of that before. Yeah. Is that normal?
Yeah.
In private sector, absolutely.
Yeah.
Never
heard
of that.
There's two. There's golden hello and golden handshakes.
Don't tell
my
mind going about golden handshakes. Oh, we're going to drop the line
like that. Yes. You have to be very, very precise about how you say it.
But they've used it in TV. teaching.
And that's why it's so important also having the grading of making sure that the candidate stays long enough to benefit your, you know, the employer. And hopefully the longer they stay, the more they would like to stay.
Exactly. Stay 3 years, do you, to get the full back?
Yeah.
Do you get that back? How do you get it back?
Well, we're going to have to put a clause in the contract for employment that we recover it out of the final salary.
Yeah. We used to, 20 years ago, whenever there was a particular sort of boom in architecture, we did it several times in my practice, Councillor Sars pointed out the clawback, and you know, it is possible to get it back, but the final salary, basically you have to make sure that the final payment is hopefully more than the amount that they actually owe.
There's a lot of people on 2-3 months notice, so you know, we've got more than just the 1 month.
Absolutely. But yeah, again, all worth trying. All worth trying. Okay, any other comments, any other points? Councillor Gray.
Thank you, Chair. Just a general observation that when things are being updated, it's all in red, and anything going is crossed out, and the new bits are underlined. Would it be easier for everyone if we could use red for what's going and green for what's coming in?
On the track changes? I don't know whether Microsoft's that sophisticated.
Through you, Chair, I think that's probably a Word document process that the track changes uses one colour for one person and another colour for another person. Yeah. It's differentiate between the types of track changes. So it makes it a bit more complicated.
That's a shame.
We'll contact Bill Gates and make a suggestion. I know what you mean, though. Sometimes it's just a visual thing. Sometimes actually helps and makes a huge difference. But okay, right. Okay. So look, we have a recommendation which is on page 66 that we adopt, or that the policy is agreed, and the market premium policy is deleted for the reasons given again on the same page. Can I ask for a second for that? I'll second that. Councillor, there we go. Bit of variation. Yeah. Can we see all of those in favour? Okay, that's everyone. Thank you very much, Councillor. So we now move on to our pay policy statement, which our annual pay policy statement, which starts on page 78. So again, this is our annual statement covering the period looking forward from this coming April for the following year, so April 23 to March 24. I think most people will recognise this from when they've seen it previously. Who's taking this through? Is it Sally? Short straw. Is there anything else that you want to actually flag in this as a statement?
As you mentioned, we bring this each year just with an update, so it's just a summary of the council's pay policies, our approach to job evaluation, remuneration, overtime, that kind of thing. So we will just add additions and amendments to it. So obviously we update salaries and things like that. This year we've expanded the severance payment section because there's been some new guidance on special severance payments. So we've had to update the updating the constitution. So there's just areas in this to reflect the government guidance in that area. And then the other thing that changes each year is the pay multiple. Okay. So we looked at that this year, it's 5.86.
Can I ask, on page 85, there's reference to the market premium, which we've obviously just agreed to delete. Does that need updating? Because it actually refers to the actual policy itself.
Yes, it will do.
Just to demonstrate, we read the papers. Councillor Sartre and myself both spotted it.
I don't know how it will work in this, but we could just make reference to the new policy instead of the old one, couldn't we? So, if we can.
I mean, it's not inappropriate in the sense that we've only just agreed to delete the old one, so until that moment, it's not happened.
Yeah.
But obviously, it has now happened.
So through you, Chair, when this report's drafted to go to council, there could be a small section in there just to highlight that it's...
That it's been updated following the previous decision.
Yeah, it will be updated before this, yeah.
Councillor Gerard.
Thank you. Can I ask what does TUPE stand for?
TUPE.
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 So that's the transfer undertaking. It's when people work for an organisation, they're transferred to another organisation, they're afforded certain protections as part of that. So if someone from another council, for example, transferred to us, their terms and conditions would be protected from the previous council. So it's a legislation, it's just to do with transferring employees.
To make sure that you're no worse off if you move jobs within the sector.
Thank you.
It's a safety net.
Yeah,
thank you.
Are there any other points that anyone wants to raise? Councillor Sire, have you spotted anything else?
No, it was that one.
All right. Anything else from anyone else? No? Yeah. Okay. It is a pretty straightforward document, so that's not surprising. Okay, look, we've got a recommendation which is on page 78, which is that we approve the pay policy statement, which will then be put to full council for formal approval and adoption. The reason that's stated, which is that it's under section 38 of the Labourism Act 2011. Can I see a seconder for this? Councillor Gray. We'll move it around the table. You're 2 seconds too late, Councillor Gerard. Can I see all of those in favour? That's everyone. Okay, thank you very much. Right, so that was the last item on the agenda. So thank you very much for formally closing the meeting. Thank you.